Paul Pachter, President and CEO of Long Island Cares, the Harry Chapin Regional Food Bank, and welcome back to another episode of Breaking Bread, sponsored by Cardworks. For all your financial needs, and you probably have many, go visit cardworks.com. Today's episode, we're not fooling around. We're taking a deep dive into a very important issue, and that is racism and discrimination and everything else that goes along with it. And there's no one better in my mind to talk about this subject than the president of racism, and that would be Laura Harding. What a pleasure it is to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Paul. It is really good to see you. Before we get into this really tough, heavy subject, I want to first let the world know what a beautiful place you have here. You walk in and you immediately feel welcomed. It is reflective of all of your principles, and it is so inclusive, and it is really good to see that and have it feel authentic and not just thank something you. That's checked. And I also want to thank you for your support of Erase Racism.
Thank you very much. Yes. I really appreciate that. The staff really worked hard to put this new facility together. And we always envisioned that it would be a place where anyone could come and do their business. You know, if you wanted to host a workshop and with all the smart boards and video terminals, come on down.
It feels that way.
Thank you. You've succeeded. Thank you.
Thanks.
So when someone talks about, when someone mentions the word racism, and it's been in the news now for decades. We just can't escape it. We just don't want to, you know, man up to it. It is what it is. Why? Why in your position, why, excuse me, are we still dealing with this issue?
You know, James Baldwin has a quote, and I'm probably going to mangle it, but he says something to the effect of nothing can be changed until you faced it. And so when you think about South Africa, when Nelson Mandela, or maybe right before he became president, they had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission where they aired out all of the dirty laundry, right? All of the painful memories, all of the murders of young children and activists and young people. And you got to see all of the nastiness that that apartheid regime did. But what it did, it didn't solve the issues that they have there, but what it did was it gave a reckoning. And I think part of what is happening in America is that we will continuously have to deal with this issue. We will continuously have negative politicians exploit the issue for their gain. We'll continue to have it because we don't want to have a conversation about it, right? And when we have the conversation, you know, I'm not a Shelby Steele fan, but many years ago when I was at Adelphi as an undergrad, he wrote a book and he talked about the way, the paradigm in which we have the conversation. When we have the conversation around race, it's a place where Black people and other people who've experienced discrimination at the hands of white people get angry, they get upset, and they get hurt. White people feel shame and guilt and also anger because they feel like they're being called to task for something they didn't do, but they are benefiting from. And so what ends up happening is we have these conversations with all of these emotions, and we don't get to the point where we move past the emotions to actually deal with the impact.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so when you change the paradigm, and a lot of times as someone who facilitates workshops around equity and inclusion and belonging, a lot of times what I try to do is bring a social emotional perspective to it. I really love the way Rezma Menakem, who wrote Grandma's Hands, talks about helping people feel, identify what they do or where pain, guilt, shame, anger shows up in their bodies, right? Glenn Singleton's Courageous Conversation uses a compass that asks you to think about where you feel things. Is it in your heart? Is it in your mind, right? So you get to really get in tune with where you're feeling it so that once you acknowledge it, for AIDS, then you can move past it and you can actually have the conversation. The other piece I think we don't do enough of when we talk about racism is actually support people in going through the change, right? Mm. Racism is white people's problem to solve. BIPOC people have to heal not only from the effects of racism, but mm-hmm. also from their role in helping to perpetuate yeah. it, right? So the work is for everyone, but the work is different.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to support people through that difference because once they realize they have work to do, you don't wake up, you don't go to a training and I did all the trainings. And
I have
now
a certificate.
I have a certificate. I am an anti-racist, right? We're talking about changing behavior. We're talking about really interrupting your bias when mm-hmm. they show up, yeah. right? And that's a practice. It's mm-hmm. not something you arrive at. It's a practice even for me, right? As someone who is constantly reflecting. So if you're a parent, if you're someone who struggles with weight, you mm-hmm. struggle with addiction, any of those things, dealing with racism yeah. is the same thing.
Absolutely.
You have to make a different choice.
Yep.
You have to forgive yourself when you fall short, but you have to make a commitment to try again and do something better.
It really does take, you know, let me back up one second because you said so much in that, you know, in that response. You look at Grandma's Hand, you look at James Baldwin, mm-hmm. you look at Maya Angelou, you look at all the great black novelists, poets, and we're having a discussion about it, but yet in the educational system, their books are being banned
yep.
every day
yep.
because nobody wants to have the conversation. As you said, majority of people, regardless what government they're in, do not want to come to terms with this.
Can I interrupt
yeah,
you here?
Absolutely.
Because I think this is really important, especially as we're dealing with the issue in Florida with mm-hmm. with the governor saying that the AP African American course is advancing an agenda. Meanwhile, there are AP Japanese courses, sure. Chinese courses, right? And so that's a level of erasure of the African mm-hmm. and Black American experience. And we need to talk about that. Because the thing about people like James Baldwin was not only a novelist, but he was a great thinker on the things that were happening.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of my favorite authors. I love James Baldwin because the way he constructs a sentence, right? And it always has like three meanings to it. There's the yeah. literal meaning, which is always grammatically correct. There's a beauty to it. And then there are these deeper meanings that you can assign to it. But he was a great novelist.
Yeah.
So the fact that you would deny children
mm-hmm.
the opportunity to understand what great writing looks like because of who the person is,
right.
whether it's their gender, their race, their sexual identity, whatever you put there, it is scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it also does is means that we as Americans can't compete with the rest of the world.
Right, because the rest of the world isn't where we are.
Because we're not having
yep.
the critical thinking skills. Like the thing about James Baldwin is, you know, you read The Fire Next Time and it's all about America, but it's also about a very personal story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also about how do you write an essay? You know what I mean? And so there are levels to it. So the idea that the only thing that you can talk about with James Baldwin which is something that was really important to him, his mm-hmm. social critique, but also that if you experience discomfort, this is the real issue.
Mm-hmm.
If you experience discomfort as a result of a conversation,
yeah.
then you shouldn't have the conversation. Well, how are we even going to grow as individuals?
Mm-hmm. Because you have to have the conversation. What I think a lot of people do is they do want to have the conversation, but they want to have it in a way where they don't feel threatened. Or, as you said, they don't feel guilty that they took part in it. You know, you talk about, earlier you said about, you know, people feeling guilty about being racist or, you know, discriminating against other people. And I look at that and equate it, although it may not be the best way to equate it, with Germany and the Jewish people. there's a whole generation of Germans who felt that what happened in World War II, we can't talk to Jewish people. And for decades, Jewish people disliked German people. I know Jewish families, they wouldn't buy a Volkswagen because it was going to Germany. Guys, we need to move past that. But on the other hand, we do need to come to some agreement that we reconcile some of this.
I think, let me push back a little.
Go ahead.
I don't think you get to move past it. I think you get to make peace with it. And that's a different thing, right?
I accept that.
Because your past and your experiences, this a lot of this stuff is all in our genes, our genetic makeup. And when you think about the Jewish people, when you think about the conversation in America about black people and enslavement, it's also a theme that is reinforced at home and in society,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing is, how do you make peace with something that was so harmful? And how do you get to the point where in making peace with it, you don't forget about it, you don't disrespect it, but you understand that that was a chapter and that mm-hmm. you have an ability to create something else. But the other thing I want to talk about racism and white supremacy is that the reason also why it is so difficult to talk about is because it's doing its job right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So literally, when you think about civil rights, when you think about racism, everyone thinks about the KKK, everyone mm-hmm. thinks about David Duke, yeah. everyone thinks about, you know, racist police officers murdering black people, right?
Yeah.
But we don't talk about the way it's been built into our policies, our laws, our practice. How we show up for each other, how we view each other. And so it is almost like a silent killer. It's almost like a carbon monoxide.
Mm.
A slow leak. We all have been contaminated. And unless you really work at it, we all are operating from this place, right? And we can't identify it unless it's overt. So when it gets called out and when you say white privilege,
mm-hmm.
it feels like I'm attacking you because you're white. When what you're really talking about is what has been created mm-hmm. in the system and flourishes in such a way that as a white person, you don't have to think about your day-to-day experience. You don't have to think about, can I walk down that street,
mm-hmm.
right? Many times when I lead workshops, I always ask folk, when did they discover that they were the race, which is a social mm-hmm. construct, that they've been identified with? Black people, people of color, their whole entire existence for the most part, unless you, even when you're growing up in the Caribbean like I did,
mm-hmm.
it's juxtaposition to whiteness.
So I want to respond to that for a second. What you just said, I mean, I'm trying to take this all in because
it's a lot.
What concerns me, and I would lose sleep over this, is we talk about how ingrained bigotry and racism is in our society, in our policies, in some of our practices on government levels. And I fear, I really do, that for at least the foreseeable future, maybe like the next 2 years, that we're going to see this in real time, like cancer, metastasize, because we have elected officials who have no problem showing who they are and, you know, how they, you know, look at the world. So I think we really do, you know, have to talk about this. But one of the things I really want to get into, and we will get into it on the next episode of Breaking Bread. There is so much to unload here with my friend Laura Harding that we've got to have her back on the next episode. So until we see you again, this is Paul Pachter, CEO and president of Long Island Cares. Until next time, we break bread together. Stay well.